Coming up on Tech News Today, Ron Richards joins me again. We're going to talk about Samsung's new ruggedized phone. Podcasts are apparently finally saved from an overly broad patent. YouTube is actually Google's next big messaging app. Foxconn might be coming to Michigan for self-driving tech R&D and a whole lot more. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1826, recorded Monday, August 7th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to save 20% off any order. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life, and that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/TNT. And by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again with Eero's hyper-fast, super simple Wi-Fi system. And now, the second generation Eero is tri-band and twice as fast. For free overnight shipping, visit Eero.com, select overnight shipping at checkout, and make sure to enter the code TNT. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about some of the biggest tech news stories with people who are passionate about technology. I'm Jason Howell. Megan Maroney is out once again, but we have the return of my friend Ron Richards. How's it going, Ron?
I'm getting real comfortable being inside that monitor, Jason. It's good to be back.
It's good to have you back. We've got a couple of stories that are tailor-made for you. Yes, there's one in there that's Android, but there's one in there that's comics also, and when I realized that you were going to be sitting next to me on this show, I was like, this is the perfect time for Ron.
This is good timing.
This is like what you were made for.
You called and I showed up. The Ronixo signal went out and I responded. So there you go.
That is quite literally exactly how it happened, actually. There's very little talking that up. So let's start off with some news stories here. And this first one, yeah, this feels very comfortable for us. Samsung has a new phone for those of you who are looking for a ruggedized premium smartphone to kick around. Literally, you could kick this one around if you want. The Samsung Galaxy S8 Active is a bit flatter than the curvy S8 that we saw earlier this year. It has bezels that extend out a bit more to protect against scratches and drops. The metal frame is thicker. Polycarbonate backside that meets military-grade durability. Not only that, the battery gets a really big boost here from 3,000 milliamp hours to 4,000 milliamp hours. And I didn't realize this because shatterproof screen seems to be coming more and more of a thing. We saw it with the Motorola phone, the G2 Force or something like that a couple of weeks ago. It had a shatterproof screen. This apparently has shatterproof screen as well. What do you think?
It's also going to have a shatterproof screen, assuming it ever ships, is the Essential.
Oh, really?
Wasn't that shatterproof? That was their whole durability thing, wasn't it? Isn't it shatterproof? I might be wrong, but I know the titanium casing and making it so that you could drop the phone, it wouldn't be the end of the world. And I'm not trying to co-opt this discussion and talk about the Essential phone. I apologize.
It's okay. When I did a Google search for Essential shatterproof, I got some wonderful dinner plates from Crate and Barrel that are apparently shatterproof.
There it is, yeah.
They're Essential.
I believe it's shatterproof. I could be wrong, but I know that was a big thing, is that it was durable.
Yes,
but
I do remember the titanium. Yes.
It's interesting, though, because like I feel like, especially in the world of Android phones, for years, these active, rugged, durable phones have existed. If you remember 5 years ago, Jason, wasn't I trying to get you to buy one of those? It was a Casio or something like that. It was some weird phone that was like all rubberized and whatever.
Yep.
But it's funny because I never see these in the wild.
Yeah.
I never see anyone with these phones. But in looking at the photo, I guess it's not a render, but looking at the photo of the Samsung Galaxy S8 Active, this looks no different than the ridiculous rugged cases people put on phones. So it's kind of genius to just put that into the case of the phone.
Yeah, I mean, they're building it in the case. If you take a look at the front shot, you can see the kind of unique. The front shot. You see the unique kind of side bumpers. There's bumpers on the corner, little metal bumpers to absorb shock on the drops.
The back is what looks like an OtterBox case.
Yeah, and the back ends up looking totally OtterBox-like. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, in Samsung, I don't know if I've necessarily seen a lot of these out in the wild. I have seen them very rarely, though. So if I'm seeing them very rarely, there's probably more out there than we may think, because there are plenty of phones that I've never, ever seen out there. But, I mean, it's exclusive to AT&T for a limited time. So right out of the gate, it's got an exclusivity built into it. But there's a very particular market of people that are out, you know, they're working on construction sites or whatever. Their jobs are really intense and have high potential for their phones to get dropped and destroyed. And yeah, you're right. Samsung just kind of builds it into this particular style of phone. It's the Samsung brand name, which a lot of people are looking for. If they aren't looking for iPhone, they're looking for Samsung. And you couple that with rugged and, you know, they're all in. It's $850 as compared to $750 for the S8.
And I would think that this kind of, as a product feature, this rugged extra bit, you know, and also a big battery helps too. Like this, I could see like selling this. This isn't a tough sell, I would imagine, in the stores. Like right. Someone walks into a Verizon store and like, oh, I want a phone that I'm not going to drop, that I'm not going to break. This checks off all those boxes. $850. That's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. But it's, you know, it's good for those with a case aversion. Burke, your thing flipped over, but I thought it was pretty funny. Burke said, I saw a Samsung Active in the wild. It had a shattered screen. I don't know if this shatterproof screen is necessarily something that's been in all of the Active models in the past. It was mostly that it was waterproof and dustproof. You're right. And this one has that, but so does the S8. So now they've gone another step and put in the shatterproof screen. So that's kind of a new part of this. And I think that's a big one.
I need to correct myself. I was wrong. The Essential Phone has a Gorilla Glass 5 glass, okay. So it's not shatterproof.
But I do remember. I know what you're talking about. They were talking about how the titanium case makes it more resistant to drops and everything. It's just it's hard to get around the screen. What I wonder is when you're talking about shatterproof screen and the shatterproof screens that I've seen and the Force that we were talking about, the Motorola phone. The screen ends up feeling kind of, it's like a layer of plastic. And it's actually, in the case of the Force, that makes it more prone to scratches. Samsung says that this won't be prone to scratches in that regard. So I'm wondering, how is it shatterproof? Is it that plasticky cover, or is it something different?
I'm just waiting for transparent aluminum to become a real thing. I know we saw it in Star Trek IV in 1987, and that was a glimpse of the future. I'm being very patient, but once we have transparent aluminum, then all of our phone problems will be solved.
You are being very patient. That's true.
Yes.
You may have heard about Personal Audio and their pursuit to clamp down on podcasts as a whole using their patent for, and I quote, a system for disseminating media content representing episodes in a serialized sequence. They were using that patent as ammo to do such a thing. Well, for quite a while, the podcast industry has had this kind of cloud hanging overhead, threatening the medium itself because of the potential of this patent. Personal Audio targeted Adam Carolla, How Stuff Works, CBS, and NBC, just to name a few. And the Electronic Frontier Foundation took up the call of podcasters to fight for the format and protect against the broad patent. The EFF wanted to protect independent podcasters, so it filed a petition to challenge the patent in 2013, ultimately winning that ruling in 2015 due to some prior art that was dug up. Of course, Personal Audio appealed that ruling last year, and today, this is my long way of saying today, the appeals court affirmed that the patent is in fact invalid. They pointed to the same two pieces of prior art, which were CBC's Quirks and Quarks and CNN's Internet Newsroom. Both of those dated back prior to the 1996 patent that Personal Audio had. So if you were worried that your podcast might change once Personal Audio got its claws into it, I suppose worry no more.
This is the time where then I tell everyone to go to the EFF website and donate, please. As an active donator to the EFF, and I have been for more than 10 years now, this is why they're here. They are like so much of what I do, and I know, Jason, what you do, everyone does a tweet, you know, would be potentially affected by this patent ruling.
Oh, for sure.
And we all know it's garbage. I mean, it's funny because we, on All About Android over the years, we talked about patent trolling and the Samsung Apple lawsuit and things like this. This was like literally Personal Audio trying to – you know, leverage this patent to, you know, get a cut of what's going on in podcasting and could shape the future of the industry. So the hope now is that this is enough of a nail in a coffin and that they don't try to appeal it further and hopefully it never even goes up to the Supreme Court. But in this case today, we can celebrate. Let's hope tomorrow it continues to stay shot down, and please help the EFF and support them, because if they do appeal, they're going to need our support.
Yeah, the EFF fights the good fight, and definitely, you know, and that's kind of one of the things that they called out on this, is that this threatened to affect so many independent podcasters because of an overbroad patent. It is entirely possible that they try to take it to the Supreme Court, but they have no comment on that as of yet. And I guess we'll find out at some point whether it would even make it up that far. But as for now, this chapter has ended. We don't know if we've reached the end of the book yet, though. Yep. There you go. YouTube is rolling out a new sharing feature within its Android and iOS app that will allow users to share videos with their contacts in a chat interface inside the app. Up to 30 people can be invited into a YouTube chat room from any users already in there. So if somebody's in there, they can send out the invite from directly in the chat room and bring people in. It's perhaps a more controlled environment than YouTube comments can be, maybe a little less public than YouTube comments, since it revolves around invites of specific contacts. You are determining who ends up in this YouTube chat room to talk about, well, I guess, YouTube videos along with you. how do you think this is going to do, Ron?
Well, I mean, at first glance, I groaned, but then I thought about it, and this is really no different than the direct messaging in Instagram, really. Yeah, you know, like true. a friend of mine can take a photo or a video on Instagram and send it to me and several other friends in a group, and there's like a little mini dialogue that goes on there. So I think that I feel like this is all about nomenclature. If they position this as private messaging with friends or sharing messaging with friends versus a chat room, you know what I mean? Like, those are two different things. Mm-hmm. And if it makes it easier for me to send videos to my friends and talk about it, cool. Let me make a chat room with up to 30 people to watch YouTube videos. Not cool. So, I mean, I feel like it's doing the same thing, but it's all about how they present it.
Yeah, for sure. And I wonder if it would be maybe a little bit more like, there's always the knee-jerk reaction of, oh, groan, another messaging platform for Google. Don't they have a million of them already? But I feel like maybe this is a little different. I don't know how successful it's going to be, but maybe it is a little bit different because it's tied into a particular product. Like, it's not positioning itself to be the next, you know, SMS chat app for Android. It's quite literally like, this is YouTube and you like YouTube videos. Why don't you chat with your friends about it while you watch them?
Yeah, no, exactly. Just like you would not contact me via Instagram's DMs to see if I can do the show today. You know, there's an appropriate channel for that. But if you see a picture that you think I would like, you send it to me. And like, I think in-app messaging has a place. Like, if these are apps that you're going to, you know, interact with a lot and use, you know, and use for a specific function, having messaging built in is not a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. There are some things that are missing that might make it a little bit more appealing, like simultaneously, real-time playback for everyone at the same time. That would be nice. Like, if you're doing a live chat room, it would be nice to know that everybody's watching the same thing at the same time. You can comment live in real time. There are other apps. In fact, I think there's one app on iOS that Google created as a 20% project that does that, that takes a YouTube video and plays it simultaneously for everybody, and they can kind of be on the same page and chat about it. So there's a little more they could do with this. I'm not sure how successful it'll be, but apparently they've been testing it since May 2016, so last year. It's been rolled out to Canada in 2017 because apparently, useless statistic I didn't know, but Canada shares the most video of any place in the world.
I did not know that either. I think it's because Canadians are very polite and like to share things.
Yes, they're very good at sharing. So there you go. Up next, well, you know, what else? More news with Ron. We've got a few more news stories to talk about. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker. They are the sponsor of this episode. There's a ritual to looking for your keys. I do it all the time. Sometimes I have to, like, reposition my ritual because it just never works, right? You check the obvious places, couch, kitchen, pockets, all those obvious places. Then the weird places, you're looking in the bathroom, under the fridge, the laundry hamper. Then you start getting really creative and you start looking in places where it doesn't belong, like the freezer. 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released their first tracking device, and now they've done it again with the all-new Tracker Pixel. With Tracker Pixel, you'll never worry about losing your things again. Tracker Pixel is the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. You just place Tracker Pixel on whatever you tend to lose. You know what they are: keys, wallets, maybe even your cat. It's small enough to fit on your smallest items. When you misplace an item that has a Tracker Pixel attached, use your smartphone and a 90 decibel alert will help you find it in seconds. That's super loud. It even has powerful LED lights so you can find your items in the dark. It'll light up for you. Lose your phone, you just press the button on your Tracker Pixel and your phone rings even if it's on silent. You can even locate your item if it's miles away because every Tracker user is part of the largest crowd locate network in the world. And Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee means you truly have nothing to lose. Go to thetracker.com and enter promo code TNT to save 20% off any order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT for 20% off. All right, a few more news stories here. Ron, this story definitely for you. I thought of you immediately when I read it. Netflix announces first ever acquisition today. Miller World, or am I saying that wrong? Is it Millar World?
It's Miller World.
Okay, good.
Miller.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. A lot of people make that mistake because it's spelled Millar.
Yeah.
But he is Scottish and it is pronounced Miller.
All right, cool. So this is coming in handy already having you on today.
Yep.
They're an independent comic publisher. They're responsible for Kick-Ass, Kingsman, and Wanted, just to name a few. Ron, tell us why you think Netflix picked Miller World specifically. Why is this their first ever acquisition?
Well, yeah, really interesting. Like, at first, I'll be honest with you. At first, when this news broke, I thought it was a hoax because Mark Miller, the main guy behind Miller World, is a bit of a prankster, and he often likes to post clickbaity things to get your attention and talk about his next comic or his next movie or whatnot. But sure enough, then I saw the press release. I was like, oh, wow, this actually happened. A couple of things to clarify first. So he isn't a comic book publisher. He's more of a comic book studio.
Okay.
So what it is that he's a writer by trade. He came up writing for DC. Mark Miller came up writing for DC in the 90s, and then he wrote a lot for Marvel in the 80s. Not the 80s, sorry, 2000s. He wrote Civil War, which was kind of loosely the Captain America Civil War movie was loosely based on. He also wrote Old Man Logan, which loosely the movie Logan was based on. But then he had his own comics that he published on his own IP, and he published them through agreements with both Marvel and Image Comics. So he did all of the work, and they just published them and handled the distribution. So he's not truly a publisher because he's not handling, like, you know, the direct to store kind of business. The main comic publishers are still there, but he is a kind of a content studio. Now, why this is why Netflix picked him is because of all the comic book creators, and we're in this age of superhero comics and comic books being hot properties and TV shows and things like that, of all the people who have created comics over the past 15 years, 20 years, he is probably the single most successful creator when it comes to translating a comic to a movie. He has not only had several movies based on his work, like Civil War and Old Man Logan, like I mentioned, but he's taken his own creator-owned properties like Kick-Ass and Kingsman and Wanted and had them made into movies. For comic book writers and artists, the movie dollar, the movie money, that's nirvana. That's the dream they want to get to.
Yeah.
And in the industry, everyone's like, Miller got stuff made. He did the impossible. And that clearly got the eye of Netflix. So in this age of comic book adaptations, you know, Netflix doing so well with Marvel and Luke Cage and Daredevil and Jessica Jones and Iron Fist and the upcoming Defenders, clearly they want to get more into it. But it makes a lot more sense to have one in-house than to have to be beholden with a deal with Disney.
See, now I feel like there needs to be a Luke Cage versus Nick Cage episode.
Yeah, at some point. I know exactly.
It needs to happen. Yeah. So, do you think this is an acquisition that comic lovers can feel hopeful about, or is this like, oh man, dad just came in and, like, you know, told me the thing I like is hip and cool, and now I want out? Like,
Yeah, not so. I think it's something that comic fans can get excited about because this is going to give Mark Miller the resources. To go make more comics, which will eventually get translated into either TV series or movies, you know, produced and distributed via Netflix. That's what I'm assuming is the play here. I don't think Netflix wants to be in the business of printing comic books. That is not a fun business. Trust me, I've done it. It is also a dwindling business. That business is getting smaller year after year. Even though you'll read the comic sales are up, it's not what it once was. So really what it is about getting somebody who's immensely creative. Mark Miller is one of the most creative writers in the industry, getting him in the Netflix world and pumping out properties. Because if you look at Netflix, they're releasing something new once a week. They probably want to amp that up. And Miller has a reputation of delivering results. Both Kick-Ass and Kingsman both led to sequels and both were profitable in terms of, you know, their box office numbers and budgets. Mark Miller has a great relationship with the director Matthew Vaughn, who directed X-Men First Class and also directed Kick-Ass. So, like, Miller is just a guy who is able to bridge the gap between comics and movies, and I bet you that's what Netflix wants.
Nice. Okay. All right. So, hopeful transition for this, then. I mean, yeah, whether they want to get into comic book printing or not, I mean, it's kind of part of the deal at this point, right?
Yeah, what I imagine is that they're just going to let Mark do his thing, you know, the same way that he has been. And every time he has a new property, as opposed to having to shop it to Universal or to Fox or whomever, he just hands it to Netflix and they go and do it. So that's a pretty good deal. And I imagine he made some money off of it. So
I would imagine so.
Good job. Yeah. Mark's a good guy. He's one of the good ones. I've been lucky enough to interview him several times and work with him directly. And his heart is in the right place. He just wants to make fun stories and he does that. So I think this is a great deal and it's good. It's a good thing happening to a good guy.
So. It makes me wonder what this can't be the only acquisition Netflix has ever considered. So it makes me wonder.
I couldn't believe that this is Netflix's first acquisition. They never made an acquisition. Yeah, that's crazy. It's also interesting to note as a footnote that Kick-Ass and Kingsman are not included in that deal. Those are two properties that have already been sold and are owned by other studios. So this just reflects the current work at Miller World and future work.
Got it.
So important distinction. But that said, you know, Miller's made a bunch of comics that are awesome that I wish would get made into movies or TVs. There's one property of his called Starlight, which is kind of like it's a sci-fi kind of pulpy kind of Flash Gordon type story that would just be perfect as a movie. And so I'm hoping that sees the light of day from this.
Nice. All right. Well, I'm sure there will be plenty to look forward to there. And I don't know how long it's going to take to see the dividends on that, but coming soon. Did you know, Ron Richards, that you may have bought Amazon's very own products when you ordered from Amazon? I didn't realize that. I mean, I had heard of Amazon. What is it? Amazon, their essentials or whatever. Basics. There we go. Amazon Basics.
The basics. Right. Yep.
But Mike Murphy from Quartz went digging through more than 800 Amazon trademarks, and they confirmed 19 brands that can be found exclusively on Amazon and are actually owned by the company, even though it's actually pretty difficult, or if not impossible, to tell on the product page itself that it's made by Amazon. Outside of the Pinzon brand that lists itself as Pinzon by Amazon, the others listed on the site make no mention of their ties to Amazon, aside from a reference to being available, quote, exclusively to Prime members. So, you know, some of them, Lark and Row, Mama Bear, Strathwood, Happy Belly, there's a whole list of these products, these brands that you can find through Amazon. Some of them are like tools, some clothing goods, consumer goods, technology goods. They've got their hands in a lot. So in some ways, they're like triple dipping, right? You know, they've sold you on your Amazon Prime membership. They're controlling parts of the shipping transaction, and then they're selling you products through their store that they're making. What do you think about that?
It's the Amazon way, right? I'm not surprised at all. And like, and the thing is that if these were not decent products, we would hear more about it. But the fact is that they're fine. They're able to use the massive clout that Amazon has and their scale to make, you know, low, and whether they're selling them at a loss or whatever they're doing, but it's up to Amazon. It's not surprising. It's up to Amazon's best interest to not have to sell other people's stuff at some point.
Yeah.
Right. You know, because if you can cut out as many of the middlemen as possible, then that's more profit for the company. So I'm not surprised about it at all.
This world brought to you by Amazon. literally everything on it, brought to you by Amazon. Yeah, some were arguing, at least, you know, based on this article that Mike Murphy wrote up about this, definitely some interesting kind of work that they did into it to kind of find out what is behind these brands and how, you know, how they came to be. But some are arguing that it's kind of a clandestine approach, which basically, in essence, gives a sense that there's all of this kind of variety,
choice.
When really, when it boils down to it, you know, it's limited to, you know, Amazon and a few other things. Although at the same time, I can't tell you personally that I know of, based on looking at these brands, that I've ever bought anything that was branded as Amazon. But just kind of interesting that they're not going through the trouble of letting their shoppers know that it's coming from Amazon. I think it makes a lot of sense that it wouldn't be like clothing by Amazon and car tools by Amazon. You know what I mean? Like, I think it makes sense that they would have a brand that is separate from Amazon, but still that if it's owned by Amazon, it would mention it somewhere, that it would be at least some way possible to realize that.
What I just like is there's somebody's job at Amazon who is to make up company names.
Yes.
We go back to that list. It was just like there's some Smitten and Rebel Yell and like all this like kind of these.
It's so true.
It's very convincing, but I mean, whether they disclose this stuff or not. Yeah, look at some of these names. They're fantastic.
Blake, you know, Blake Street.
My Habit, North 11, New Pro, right? Come on.
My Habit is consumer goods. So, yes. You know, some of these are named very appropriately to the thing that they're around. But almost in a somewhat generic sort of way too.
But yeah, that's the thing. Like you show me tools that are made by Denali. I'm like, oh, that sounds like a tool company, right?
It totally
Denali.
Does.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. It's Amazon. Just it's continuing their Amazon. And we're gonna live in it's gonna be Wally, but instead of B&L or whatever that company is, it's gonna be Amazon.
Instead of Wally, it's gonna be Denali.
Denali. <Yeah. laughs>
More iPhone 8 rumors, though. Some of these we've discussed already, so you might recognize some of this stuff, but there's mounting evidence that the next iPhone will have a new infrared camera to facilitate in facial recognition, either as an augmentation or even as a replacement of the current Touch ID fingerprint security system. Apple's HomePod firmware that we talked about, I think last week, it got an update, has already shed some light on these upcoming features buried deep within the code, but another nugget has now been discovered. Of course, they're poring over this stuff to try and figure out what they can learn. The code makes reference to a resting feature that would allow for face unlock when a phone is, I would imagine anyways, in a resting state. So, for example, if your phone is sitting on the table and you don't have Touch ID to unlock it, how do you get in it without picking it up and looking at it? Well, this is making reference to the possibility, and it matches up apparently with other rumors, that the IR camera could also work at varying angles. So you wouldn't necessarily have to be looking at it face on. If my phone was resting out on the table in front of me and I happened to be near it, the IR scanner would potentially be capable of unlocking because it knows that I'm near it because it scans my face. What do you think?
It's pretty cool if it works.
Yeah. It kind of has to work, right? If they're actually replacing Touch ID, it has to work. This is Apple we're talking about here.
What's funny is that we have face unlock is nothing new. We've had it in the Android world for years, and it got quickly dismissed because it didn't work, right? And so if Apple wants to dip their toe in the face unlock world, it's got to work. And if it doesn't work, that's going to be the key thing. I don't care. And to say that, oh, it's Apple, of course it's going to work. Nope. Like, it's got to work. I would have said the same thing about Google, you know? Like, face unlock is very hard to do.
Yeah, you know? Google was doing face unlock a little differently than what these are saying.
You true.
Know what I mean, IR camera, that's a different story. Works in darkness.
It's neat. It's a different take on it, right? So maybe it will work. We'll see.
We'll certainly see. Bleak, I think, has the title for the day, Resting Unlock Face. There you go. Up next, another possible Foxconn investment in the U.S. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. The mortgage experience was not keeping up with the times. If you've ever been through it, you know it's dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution, something to tie it in with what we're used to, which is living our lives online in the digital age. And that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence that you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. that allows you to fully understand all the details and also be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. That's all there is to it. It's powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. It's all based on your income, also your assets, your credit, and Rocket Mortgage takes all of that, analyzes all the home loan options for which you qualify, and then can find the one that's just right for you. So they do all the heavy lifting for you to make it really easy. Rocket Mortgage, buy Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/TNT. That's rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. All right, so Foxconn has been grabbing headlines these past few weeks with its announcements that it would be bringing manufacturing plants to the United States, and along with it, a whole lot of jobs. They aren't done with those announcements, or so it seems. Joining us to talk about the greater strategy of this latest news is Sam Abuelsamid from Navigant Research. Welcome back, Sam.
Hey, Jason, and nice to meet you, Ron.
Hey, Sam, how you doing?
It's great to have you back. It's always good to get you on. So the first big announcement involved Foxconn's planned LCD plant in Wisconsin. But what do you know about the news that Foxconn might invest in Michigan?
Well, actually, we know very little about it. There was a report this morning in the South China Morning Post, which is an English language newspaper out of Hong Kong, that claimed that Foxconn had struck a deal with the state of Michigan to put a plant here, or to put some kind of facility here, which may be as little as an R&D facility, or it may be a giant manufacturing plant. We don't really know. Michigan's Governor John Engler has been in China for the past week or so, trying to negotiate some deals. And there, you know, there's lots of speculation, and there's a few thoughts about what it could be. What Foxconn could be doing, you know, obviously, you know, I think everybody, probably everybody that watches this show knows that Foxconn is a major supplier to Apple. They make most, if not all, of the iPhones, most of the iPads, and they also manufacture goods for a lot of technology companies. And with Apple certainly developing autonomous driving systems, it would not be inconceivable that they would want to have Foxconn as their manufacturing partner here in the U.S. So it's possible that, you know, I think if Apple's doing this, more than likely they're following a similar approach to what Waymo is doing with designing all their own sensors using technology that they got from their acquisition of PrimeSense a few years ago, mm-hmm. Developing their own compute platform for the automated driving using their processor technology that they've designed. And so they could easily have work with Foxconn to establish a manufacturing presence here. And because there's already a supply base here in Michigan for most of the stuff that Foxconn would need. And, you know, Foxconn, one of the reasons that's often given for Apple not wanting to move their manufacturing out of China is because of the existing supply base that's there that can respond quickly. We have a similar kind of supply base here in Michigan that can provide all the bits and pieces that Foxconn would need to make stuff for Apple or for any other company. Like it could also be Waymo that they're working with. It doesn't have to be Apple, but that would be the most likely scenario.
And I mean, Foxconn, it seems like, has been pushing back on these statements that were made by the chairman in the Chinese media on this topic. Why do you think they're not on the same page at this point? Was it just going rogue, or was it?
You know, it's hard to tell. You know, it's entirely possible that, you know, whoever wrote this up for the South China Morning Post, you know, may have misinterpreted some statements. It's also possible that, you know, perhaps Governor Rick Snyder's people maybe spoke too soon before everything was nailed down as far as the deal goes. So, you know, I'm sure that that the governor is very anxious to, you know, as a Republican, he's probably very anxious to make a, you know, make a good presence, support his party, you know, by bringing more jobs to the state of Michigan.
Sure.
So, you know, it's likely that, you know, maybe his PR people got a little over enthusiastic, you know, before all the details were worked out.
Yeah. How involved with autonomous vehicle development has Foxconn been in China? I mean, this wouldn't necessarily be replacing the work that they're doing in China. It would just be in addition to, and it sounds like you were talking about the supply base in Michigan being a reason why it's good to do it there. I mean, how does that tie into what Foxconn is doing as a whole, like kind of as a greater whole?
As far as we know, they haven't had any involvement in developing automated driving systems in China. Although, you know, the Chinese market, you know, the companies that are working on this stuff over there, it's much more opaque, you know, just as it is with other businesses. So it's hard to tell who's working with who over there. But we've not heard any reports at all of Foxconn being involved in this. That said, you know, they produce all kinds of electronic components for a wide variety of companies. You know, their parent company, Hanhai Precision, you know, has a number of subsidiaries, and it's entirely possible that, you know, they have some business somewhere that's producing some stuff. Even if they're not involved in the auto industry right now, you know, their expertise in manufacturing electronics like phones could very well be translated over to manufacturing sensors and electronic control units for automated driving systems, you know, anywhere.
So given this kind of reaction to the chairman and then the kind of the miscommunication, how does this affect what Foxconn's R&D efforts in its Chinese facilities will be? Like what does this mean for Foxconn standing?
It probably won't have any, I would guess it won't have any impact at all. You know, it seems like, you know, if they are going to get into producing or developing components for automated driving, not sure what happened to my background there.
the illusion is shattered.
Yeah. Gee, you'd think I was sitting in front of a lake.
I was hoping.
Anyway. Yeah. So was I actually. at any rate, you know, if they, this, you know, this would be an add-on to their existing business, you know, so I don't think it would have any impact in one way or the other, whether this moves forward or not on any of the business they're doing already with, you know, with a wide variety of companies.
Is it possible that deals like this, because it sounds like Michigan, I mean, obviously Michigan has a storied history when it comes to the automotive industry, probably one of the most recognizable places around which the automotive industry has thrived in the past. Not doing so well at the current state by comparison, but then now we have this revitalized kind of look around technology and autonomous vehicles, and it seems like Michigan is becoming, you know, again becoming a place to rally behind for a number of reasons. Is it possible that deals like this could revitalize Michigan's economy in a significant way and kind of bring it back to where it once was, or closer to where it once was?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, it never hurts to have a new company come in and bring new jobs into the state, you know, whether it's Michigan or anywhere else. You know, that's always a good thing when somebody is creating new business and employing more people.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's a good thing. The one potential downside is that inevitably, you know, any of these kinds of deals, there's always big tax incentives that are given to a company in order to entice them to build in your location, in your state or your city. You know, in the reports, you know, last week or the week before about the announcement in Wisconsin with the LCD plant there, it was estimated that, you know, the jobs that Foxconn would potentially be creating there would be costing the state as much as $230,000 per job in tax incentives. You know, and that's not at all out of the ordinary with a lot of these kinds of deals. You know, the deal that Faraday Future had made with the state of Nevada to build a plant in North Las Vegas, you know, was along similar lines. And so it all depends on how these deals are structured. You know, everywhere, you know, there's a new company coming in, there's deals like this. And depending on how the deals are structured, as long as the companies aren't necessarily given too much of the money up front, then there's probably not too much downside. So, you know, it's important to make sure that they, you know, that they have some goals that they have to meet before they can get these incentives. So, for example, the Faraday case, you know, they recently bailed out on the plans to build in Las Vegas, and they just today announced that they're going to be leasing a factory in California. You know, they hadn't really done much of anything there. And the way that deal was set up with the state of Nevada, you know, basically Nevada hadn't really put out any money yet to Faraday. So they haven't lost very much as it is. So it all depends on the details.
Yeah, absolutely. Right on. Well, so before we go, I definitely want to make sure and mention you have a new column in Automotive Engineering Magazine. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing over there.
Yeah, so I'm started doing a monthly column for Automotive Engineering, which is the magazine of the Society of Automotive Engineers. You can find it online at sae.org. And every month I'll be writing something about autonomous and connected vehicles, something related to that. My first column this month that just published last week is about the recent Lexmark printer ruling in the Supreme Court that more or less established the right to repair as something being in law, so that, you know, once a company sells a product to consumers, the consumers are allowed to do whatever they want with it. And so, you know, the column kind of takes a look at what are the potential impacts for automated driving and how this might affect the business of automated driving.
That's fascinating, because I mean, there's going to be, people are so used to having the freedom to tinker with their cars. I mean, when you start to add in technology as this extra layer, does that change things? I guess, does your article point out that, I mean, based on this ruling, it wouldn't, people still would be able to? What's the greater implication of something like
that? The greater implication is that, under the law, under this ruling, people would be able to tinker with their cars, assuming they could actually purchase the vehicle.
Yeah, there is that.
So what I see being likely to happen, and, you know, this has been what I've been projecting for a while, but I think this kind of reinforces the idea that autonomous cars are not going to be something most people are ever going to be able to buy. They're only going to be available most likely through mobility services, mobility on demand services. So autonomous ride hailing. So think of it as, you know, Uber, Lyft, but with autonomous vehicles, so that, you know, you're never going to have the opportunity to own one of these vehicles. And since you don't own it, you can't mess with it.
Right. Well, Sam, I really appreciate you joining us today and telling us about these few stories here. Sam Abuelsamid, Navigant Research, of course. And then now, of course, you can find his new column at Automotive Engineering Magazine as well. Thank you, Sam.
And don't forget the Wheel Bearings podcast as well, where Dan Roth and I talk about cars and the future of transportation every week.
You have a lot of stuff going on. Where can people find that podcast?
At wheelbearings.media.
Right on. Cool. Thanks again, Sam. We really appreciate it. And I hope that I hope that the weather outside of your window turns from that green back to a nice blue.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care, Sam. See you later.
Bye.
What can we say? You know, green screen, it's not easy.
It's amazing how the haze just rolled into that lake and rolled out so quickly.
It's like instantaneous. It's like you blink and there's the haze and then it's gone.
I thought the fog in San Francisco moved fast, but that's got nothing compared to Sam's haze.
Yeah, so. most erratic weather ever. Up next, a change to the echo that might just put you in the right mood, if you know what I mean. But first, let's take a minute to thank Eero, the sponsor of this episode. I've got three of them right here. You can install an enterprise-grade Wi-Fi system in your home in just a few minutes. It's like the easiest setup in the world. This is distributed Wi-Fi throughout your home. This is kind of the premium pack. You get three full-size Eero's, and it's just awesome. It's super easy. I love that the Wi-Fi mesh setup is such a big deal right now, because it's definitely helped improve the Wi-Fi in my home. You simply download the Eero app on your iOS or Android device, and then it's going to walk you through each step of the process. And they really do make it quick and make it easy. It's painless. You can easily create and share a guest network. So if you have people coming over, you don't have to put them on your network. You can create a guest network for them. Know how many devices are connected at any given point. Also, which devices are connected. You can check the internet speed that you're getting from your service provider through the app. Eero is protected with state-of-the-art WPA2 encryption. Eero updates automatically, so you're always going to have the latest features and improved security at all time. And now they are excited excited to introduce what I just showed you, the second generation Eero and Eero Beacon. Now, Eero home Wi-Fi system started in early 2016. Since then, they've learned from hundreds of thousands of systems, making them smarter, making them faster and more reliable. The new Eero second generation and Eero Beacon allow a customer to build a Wi-Fi system that's more perfectly tailored for their home than ever before. They offer more speed and range and the same high quality, elegant design that people have come to expect. With the addition of a third 5 gigahertz radio, the second generation Eero is now tri-band, and as a result, it's twice as fast as its predecessor, which lets customers do more simultaneously in every room of the house, because that's what this mesh setup is all about. And with the addition of the new Thread radio, Eero can connect to low power devices such as locks, doorbells, other sensors, and a whole lot more. Expanding your coverage in any room is easy. With Eero Beacon, you simply plug it into a wall and you're covered. It literally plugs into a wall. It has a nightlight built into it that you can set up. So it's kind of doing dual purpose. I have one in my bedroom. It's become the new nightlight out in the front, but it's also extending our Wi-Fi. It works really well. You can add as many Eero Beacons as you want. If there's an outlet, literally, that's all you need. There's Wi-Fi. You just plug a beacon into it. And like I said, it's super easy to use. I think I had the whole system, 2 beacons and the Eero set up in my home. I think it took me like 10 minutes total, beginning to end. And I remember when networking like this used to be super frustrating. So pretty cool stuff. For free overnight shipping, visit Eero.com. At checkout, you'll want to select overnight shipping and then enter TNT. That's going to make it free. So you're going to get it super fast. That's Eero.com. Enter code TNT, and we thank Eero for their support of Tech News Today. TNT's fan of the day is Todd Wiskowski, who sent us this picture. He actually sent emailed it to us, tnt@twit.tv, showing us his master control where he watches the show in his home. Good looking setup. Thank you for sending that in. We always really appreciate it. I can't tell. Are you drinking a beer or a soda in a can koozie?
It looks like it's a koozie. Definitely have a koozie there, and that looks to be like a beer.
It might say light. Is that a Miller Light? I don't know.
Looks like it.
What did you think, Burke? Oh, Burke thinks it's a Monster energy drink.
Oh, it does look like the Monster logo.
I know. You got to be powered when you're watching TNT. I get it.
Sure.
Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it. All right. Finally, Amazon made an update to its Echo devices to include a new activities feature that ties into Amazon Music. That service you may or may not be using very much. Amazon built in 500 different activity utterances to encapsulate a number of different scenarios around which a music playlist can be built. So you can play music for getting pumped, or you can play music for sleeping, or for those of you who really want to impress that special someone, you lower the lights, you pour a couple of glasses of wine, and you say, "Echo, play baby making music." And yep, totally works. It works, or so I'm told. I don't have an Echo, but Ron, what do you think?
I think that it's a great interaction to add in, like, kind of, you don't tell it what kind of music you want. That said, this reminds me of a complaint I have about Google Play Music, which is the service I use, which they have the same kind. They have, like, throughout the day when you go to Google Play Music, it's like, oh, look, you're at home. Here's music to listen to at home, or it's early in the morning. Here's waking up music. And they have a category of music called entering beast mode. And yeah. I never will use the term beast mode. You're never going to sit at home and turn to your wife and say, "Hey, let's play some baby making music."
You're right. You're right.
The idea is great and sound. The execution is a little off. That's all.
It's one of those things that is funny to know that it's there. But yeah, you're right. You're probably never gonna do that.
I mean, it's one thing to say like, "Hey, play me some music to get excited," or "play me some act," you know, like all those different terms. But no one is gonna say, "Play me baby making music." I know I'm focused in on that, but like, that's the example. I'm never gonna. There you go.
Oh, is this baby making music too? Or okay.
Wow.
See, hey, you know what? It's a wide playlist. There are many songs that would be classified as baby making music, apparently.
True, yeah.
Anyways, hey, look, and don't fault us for covering the story. Amazon's the one that built it into their consumer hardware. Just saying.
Yeah.
But there you go. So if you have an Echo, now you can do that, and that's good to know. Ron, I really appreciate you coming on, especially because this was kind of last minute, and I totally appreciate it. Next time, actually, Bleak made us something so that next time I need to rope you in, I put in a link in the doc, Brian. It's right there underneath the sign-off. If I ever need to put the call out to you, Ron, I'm just going to put this in the sky. And
there you go.
And that'll be my call.
Listen, I may not be the podcaster you want, but I'm the podcaster you need.
You're both, Ron, as far as I'm concerned. In my book, you're all of the above. Ron Richards, where can people kind of follow all the stuff you're doing?
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. Love being here with you, Jason. You can go follow me on Twitter at RonXO. That's where I've got links to all my stuff, and you can see me talking about stuff throughout the days. But please, 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 if you like podcasts, go check out iFanboy.com, my other podcast where we're talking about comic books, much like we talked about earlier with Mark Miller. Talk about comic books and TV and movies and fun stuff there. And also check out my other podcast with Tom Merritt, Damn Fine Podcast at DamnFinePodcast.com, talking about Twin Peaks. So try to keep busy. Follow me on Twitter. That's where you'll find everything.
Radical. Thank you, Ron. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon. TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can always be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV. You can always find all the ways to subscribe to the show if you go to twit.tv/TNT. Everything's there that you're going to need to find. If you want to tweet at me, I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director and today's editor and occasional baby-making music player, Brian Burnett. With the shades. Wasn't expecting that. Of course, it is very bright over there, so I understand. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio, as always, an occasional Burke chat. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Hands up. Bam.
Bam.
Oh, sorry. I gave you a forehead five.
I walked into it.